Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, November 25th, 2020. Two church leaders from Kajukeji County say the SPLM-IO and South Sudan Army are still occupying institutions in the area.
People are willing to come home because people are tired of being outside. But their fear is, if one obstacle can be removed, is the presence of the forces in the land.
And young men and women are calling on South Sudanese leaders to involve young people in decision-making.
We also want South Sudan that recognizes the importance of the freedom of expression among the journalists.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Two Anglican bishops from Kajukeji County of Central Equatorial State say South Sudan's People's Defense Forces and the SPLA-IO are still occupying the premises of civilian institutions, including schools in Kajukeji. The two bishops say life is returning to normal with some shops opening and people going about their daily business, but the presence of armed groups in the town could pose threats to South Sudanese returning from refugee camps in Uganda. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Bishop Emmanuel Mure Modi of the Kajukeji Diocese and Bishop Joseph Abad Odoka of the Liwolo Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan say, although life is slowly returning to normal, with some shops reopening, the presence of armed forces in civilian installations poses a threat to refugees returning to Kajukeji County. Bishop Dodoka says government and SPLA-IO forces still occupy health centers, schools, and other area public buildings.
People are willing to come home because people are tired of being outside. But their fear is, if one obstacle can be removed, is the presence of the forces in the land, the presence of the armed forces in civilian places, in hospitals, in schools, in the living places where people are, provide them yet a threat. But if this issue is addressed and the organized forces are put to their respected places, barracks, people will flow back to the land within no minute.
Bishop Dodoka says despite their fear of troops who are stationed in the area, people are going about their normal businesses.
Now we have a hope that God has listened to our prayer and has opened this little bit of a window so that we can be able to explore, to rebuild our lives again, to bring hope back to our people, to preach a message that now let us forgive ourselves and start a new chapter. Therefore, security-wise, yes, people are moving from the road with borders. They cross from the border in Uganda through Liwolo, and some of them come to Kajukeji, and others continue to Juba.
Bishop Emmanuel Mure Modi of the Kajukeji Diocese says over the past 5 days, he has seen people cleaning their homes and cultivating the land.
There are people who have started to open shops around Kajukeji town there. And those are some of the things which appears like indicators for peace, indicators for people who have come back. That means if this peace continues, many people will demonstrate the issue of return will not be something big.
Brigadier General Santo Domich, Deputy Military Spokesperson of the South Sudan People's Defense Force, says it is unfortunate if some SSPDF troops are still occupying civilian installations despite orders to vacate.
There has been a standing order that was issued by the SSPDF leadership across its formation that all these premises, schools or health centers, should be vacated. Should there be any presence of SSPDF in those facilities? So it is a standing order within the army. And but in regard to IO, I don't talk on behalf of IO. But what I know so far, we'll try to investigate whether there are some of SSPDF that are still lodging in those facilities.
In September, SPLA-IO forces clash among themselves in Liwolo after Major General Moses Lokujo defected and declared his loyalty to President Salva Kiir. His defection triggered a renewed wave of violence and displacement in the area. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampol Gabriel says he is not aware of any SPLA-IO forces occupying civilians' installations in the area.
It is okay that they have brought it to the attention of the leadership. It is good to put it in writing. Then we will know that our forces are occupying a civilian center and they will be informed to leave the center immediately.
Bishop Modi says he returned to Kajokeji to reassure his people, many of whom remain in refugee camps, that it is possible for them to safely return home. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Young South Sudanese men and women participating in the East African Summit are calling on the government of South Sudan to allow young people participate in building the country. The deputy president of the South Sudan Youth Union says South Sudanese leaders should allow press freedom and freedom of expression. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
The Youth Lead Summit is East Africa's indigenous flagship youth leadership development program dedicated to amplifying youth voices and encouraging their participation in regional governance. On Tuesday, the summit, which is being held across East African member states under the theme Development is Peace, focused on the role of youth in peace building and conflict prevention. South Sudan delegates talked about how young people can prevent violent extremism under the topic, The South Sudan We Want. Fernanda Paul Machue, Deputy President of the South Sudan National Youth Union, says she wants to see a South Sudan where citizens have free speech without fear of reprisals from the government.
South Sudan that recognizes the importance of the freedom of expression among the journalists, and we want, as it is in the constitution, the rights of all journalists have been put down, but why are they not being put in practice? Why are journalists still suffering? Why are they being censored? I think we need a better South Sudan than that. We also want a South Sudan that makes education a right, not a privilege for every child. We also want a South Sudan that should empower its states. As we all know now that we are trying to move to federalism, I think we need a better South Sudan that will give its powers to the states, whereby the states can be empowered. That's the South Sudan we want.
Machue says she envisions a South Sudan that gives powers to the states and allows them to exercise these powers freely. South Sudanese Grace Aguil Garang, an alumni of the U-Lead Summit, says her concerns are focused on the education system. Garang says she wants to see a South Sudan that has sustainable peace that provides security to citizens and enables children to go to school.
The South Sudan I want is a literate South Sudan, a country in which its citizens, the young people, the old, are literate. As we speak now, South Sudan has literacy levels of 99% of the country is illiterate. 99% have not gone to, let's say, universities.
The youths urged South Sudan National Union President Gola Boyoy Gola to lead young people in protest demanding rights for youths. Maliamungu Zakayos, one of the panelists at the summit, says the government wasn't prepared for independence from day one. Zakayos says the country's political elite were not prepared to lead an independent nation after the referendum in 2011, adding that's why the government continues to hire foreign nationals, even though many South Sudanese attended school abroad.
These experts, they contract. These persons that I or any of us here have studied in Nairobi or in Kampala or in Kigali, the same universities, and you find most of us performed even got better degrees than these experts. But it is very ashamed to find these experts being contracted to come and work in our country, yet we have performed better than these experts in the universities.
Zakayo says government officials should trust South Sudan's youth because they have prepared from the beginning to transform the country into a peaceful, independent nation. Soro William, another panelist at the summit, tells South Sudan in Focus youths are being denied their rights.
We want to see that the people are treated equal when it comes to the law, despite of their age, despite of their gender, despite of their ethnicity, and despite of their political beliefs.
With improved security, William says young people will feel safe to engage in agricultural production in their hometowns and produce enough food to feed the country instead of relying on relief aid. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
Health officials in Sudan's Gadarif state say the influx of refugees from Ethiopia could help the spread of COVID-19 in the area. The Director General at the State Ministry of Health says the disease could spread faster as the state continues to receive thousands of Ethiopian refugees every day. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Health officials in Gadarif say the population faces a number of health risks, including contracting the coronavirus due to congestion caused by the thousands of refugees who continue to arrive each day from the neighboring Ethiopia. Speaking to the state-owned Sudan News Agency in Gadarif last night, State Health Ministry Director Amira Hashim El-Gaddal said health workers recorded at least 5 COVID-19 cases among locals over the past week, including 2 that succumbed to the disease. She says the 3 COVID-19 patients have been cared for in an isolation center as medical workers and other aid agencies try to contain the pandemic from spreading among the refugees. Hashim says, aside from the pandemic, health officials have also recorded a number of respiratory infections, diarrhea and malaria among the local population.
Unfortunately, some villages that bordered Gadarif state were already epidemic with COVID-19 areas, and we are still witnessing influx of the refugees arriving in Amrakuba, which required an urgent isolation rooms that can be used to respond to any suspected positive cases.
More than 40,000 Ethiopian refugees who fled violence in the Tigray region are seeking shelter in the Sudan's Kassala, Gadarif, and Blue Nile states, according to the United Nations Humanitarian Agency's UNHCR. Hashim says state authorities do not have the capacity to respond to what she called a huge humanitarian crisis as the country struggles to provide life-saving medications to citizens.
They are currently living in congestion situation and in a small geographical location which is very risky to their health. These camps are supposed to be designed in a specific hygienic specification, but up to this moment, these camps are not properly constructed according to the hygienic environment.
Artis Noor, the country director for Mercy Corps in Sudan, told South Sudan in Focus yesterday that his agency set up a primary health care facility to provide critical health services to the refugees in Umrakuba camp. Hashim says, as the country is experiencing a second wave of coronavirus infections, the arrival of thousands of Ethiopian refugees could worsen the health situation in Gadarif.
The continuous influx of the refugees amid this dangerous health situation is most likely to impact on the health of our local citizens in Gadarif. Our health system is already dire amidst of health implications that exist in the state, which needs urgent interventions without further delay.
Hashim says a preliminary health survey among the arriving refugees found some confirmed cases of people living with HIV/AIDS in addition to hepatitis. She is calling on humanitarian aid agencies to quickly intervene before the situation gets out of hand. For VOA News, I am Michael Atid in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, how is the relations between Israel and Sudan developing? That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think. People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how is the birth of a child celebrated in your culture?
When we give birth in our culture, they simply take a baby somewhere there inside a house. They gather together as a family. They bring pots of milk. They slaughter goats. So they dance. That's how we easily celebrate.
I understand in a very simple way that when a baby boy is born, it is celebrated for the first 3 days with some local drinks, some local beverages, something of that kind.
They give them cows. Yeah, once you give birth to a baby, they give him or her cattle. So that's the way how they celebrate it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A delegation from Israel visited Sudan this week for talks aimed at advancing a U.S. brokered deal to establish normal relations. Sudan is the third Arab country looking to improve relations with Israel. Naba Muhyadin has reaction and analysis from Gadarif.
Israel said it sent its official delegation to Sudan to firm up the U.S.-backed normalization deal. According to Israeli media, the delegation is part of a small group of officials who are preparing higher-level visits scheduled to take place in a few weeks. A government source told VOA that the Israeli delegation held hours-long meetings with Sudanese officials in Khartoum, discussing cooperation in the fields of agriculture, water, and security. Analyst Osman Mergani says establishing good relations with Sudan is important to Israel, which wants to normalize relations with other African countries as well. Mergani says Israel is aware of Sudan's geopolitical position and its potential to influence the peace deal in Africa. He says Israel is trying to make Sudan a foothold in Africa and thinks this is the Israeli plan in strategic terms. Sudan agreed to normalize relations with Israel last month, following Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates, in a deal brokered by U.S. President Donald Trump. As part of the deal, the U.S. agreed to remove Sudan from its list of state sponsors of terrorism, a move that may allow the country to obtain loans from institutions such as the World Bank. Observers are concerned the Sudanese people might reject ties with Israel due to public support for the Palestinians. Some, however, like 24-year Isra Ahmed, are welcoming Sudan's changing foreign policy. Ahmed says, as Sudanese, she doesn't mind Sudan having ties with any country as long as Sudan gains economic benefits. She says people are fed up with being part of nonsensical ideological wars and only look for the good life. The Sudanese economy is struggling under the impact of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, and a budget deficit of $1.6 billion. Last month, Israel and the UAE sent a $5 million shipment of wheat to Sudan and said they looked forward to helping their new friend. Naba Muhyiddin for VUA News, Al Gadarif, Sudan.
From Sudan, we move to Kenya, where doctors are threatening to go on strike next month if the government does very little to address safety, health insurance, and staffing needs to fight COVID-19. The threat to paralyze medical care in Kenya comes after at least 10 doctors died from the virus this month. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenyan doctors are threatening to go on strike next month unless the government addresses their concerns about safety, health insurance, and staffing needs to fight COVID-19. The threat comes at least 10 doctors died from the virus this month. Speaking to reporters in Nairobi Tuesday, the Secretary General of the Kenya Medical Practitioners and Dentists Union, Chibanzi Mwachonda, said his members plan to go on strike because the government is not giving them medical insurance.
If these doctors are not covered,
then this strike will kick off until the time that they will be covered.
Kenya has lost 32 medical workers to COVID-19, at least 10 of them in the last 2 weeks. The deaths have angered medical workers. Watende Andrew lost his young brother to the disease. His late brother, a doctor, worked at the University of Nairobi. After 7 days in the hospital, he died.
I think because of other comorbidities, he was in the category of severe disease. He got the best attention we could, but still, I think because of comorbidities, then he developed hypoxia, saturations which were low, and when they were trying to intubate, then he passed on.
Doctors also complain about not receiving adequate personal protective gear. The union says all their requests are met with silence. Recently, President Uhuru Kenyatta opened a new health facility with 100 beds for United Nations staffers and the diplomatic community. Meanwhile, some Kenyans say they were turned away at health facilities and advised to take care of themselves at home. Mwachonda is calling on the government to employ at least 2,350 doctors and medical workers to attend to the sick in various hospitals across the country.
There is an acute shortage of doctors in this country in each and every county, and our demand is that each county must employ at least 50 doctors to cover for COVID and for the other services. If this is not addressed equally, we shall be on strike come the 6th of December.
The Kenya Nurses Union has also issued a 14-day strike notice. The union is demanding compensation for the families of 18 nurses who died from COVID-19 and salaries for some nurses who have not been paid for months. The head of the National Assembly Health Committee, Sabina Chege, said Kenya cannot afford to see doctors not working during this challenging period.
It's not a unique situation where doctors was are feeling they are not being taken care of by the government. And you know, at what point do you say it's optimal or it's enough? It can never be enough, but people can try, and we can't really manage everything. Let's look at what is the priority. What can we be able to do for now? What can wait for a month or two? Then we can have an agreement. I don't think the fight or the strike will solve anything. We'll lose more lives, and nobody is safe.
Kenya has recorded 77,800 coronavirus cases and 1,400 deaths since March. A parliamentary committee will meet Wednesday with county governors and other officials to discuss ways to avert the strike. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The government of Solomon Islands has defended its plan to ban Facebook, insisting the move would preserve national unity. Ministers say the world's largest social media platform has been grossly abused. But as Phil Mercer reports, critics insist a ban is an attempt to shut down criticism of the government's economic policies.
Facebook helps to connect the people of a tropical archipelago that stretches over more than 1,400 kilometres of the South Pacific. But the government believes the social media platform is being grossly abused. Officials in the capital, Honiara, are to discuss blocking Facebook with internet companies because of concerns about defamation and cyberbullying. Authorities want to regulate users' behaviour to protect the community from vile abusive language online. Until new laws can be passed, there'd be a temporary ban on Facebook. Minister of Communications Peter Chanel Agovaka told Radio New Zealand Pacific that tough regulations are needed.
Coming with the freedom of expression and freedom of the media is a lot of responsibility. You don't just go out and say things that out of the ordinary to your neighbours. It's about using it wisely, communicate, share information and so on, and not to abuse people.
It's unclear, however, how a ban on Facebook would work. Critics say the move would breach the constitutional rights of Solomon Islanders and attempt to shut down dissent. Opposition politicians call the proposals pathetic, while Amnesty International says any such ban would be a brazen attack on human rights. Facebook has said it was contacting authorities to discuss the plans. Any ban would put the Pacific Island nation alongside just four other countries where the social media platform is outlawed: China, Iran, North Korea, and Syria. The Solomon Islands is home to about 685,000 people. While the archipelago stretches across a vast area of ocean, its landmass is slightly smaller than the US state of Maryland. About 20% of the population has access to the internet. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Sudanese health officials in Gadarev State worry that thousands of Ethiopian refugees pouring into the area each day could make the coronavirus pandemic even worse. Gadarev officials say the population faces several health risks, including diarrhea and malaria. State Health Ministry Director Amira Hashim El Gadal told the state news agency in Sudan that health workers recorded two COVID-19 deaths this past week alone in the area. Two bishops who fled their diocese when conflict spread to Kajakaji County of Central Equatoria State back in 2016 and have since returned are calling on government and SPLAIO military commanders to withdraw their forces from schools and other public buildings. Bishop Emmanuel Murye Modi of the Kajakaji Diocese and Bishop Joseph Abba Duduka of the Luwolo Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan say although life is slowly returning to normal with some shops reopening, the presence of armed forces in civilian installations poses a threat to refugees returning to Kajakaji County. And finally, South Sudan youth delegates attending the East African ULEAD Youth Summit in Juba are urging the government to protect the free speech rights of young people. The deputy president of the South Sudan Youth Union says she wants to see a South Sudan where citizens are allowed to speak freely and journalists are allowed to do their work without fear of reprisals from the government. Mchue says she also envisions a South Sudan that gives power to the states. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Nasir by Gordon Kong. We've been listening to Gordon Kong with the song Nasir. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Thank
Well, I just like to wait on a year again.